الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبو القاسم المصطفى محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وأهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين، روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. الحمد لله، الله has given توفيق and I'm able to be back and visit you brothers and sisters again after being away for a while. Inshallah, the program will be like this, that hopefully we'll have speeches on some days, and then on some days we'll have classes on Mahdawiyya. So the classes will conduct in a different format, but the speeches inshallah will be similar to this. What we do normally is we go over verses of the Holy Quran, and we'll be going over Surah Yusuf and looking for verses that provide us with some inspiration and some lessons on what we can do in our practical lives. So now we're at verse number 59. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم فلما جهزهم بجهازهم قال ائتوني بأخ لكم من أبيكم ألا ترون أني أوفي الكيل وأنا خير المنزلين فإن لم تأتوني به فلا كيل لكم عندي ولا تقربون. So two verses from the Holy Quran, from Surah Yusuf, the story of Yusuf. The translation of the first verse is something like this. When he had furnished them with their provision, he said, Bring me a brother that you have through your father. Do you not see that I give the full measure and that I am the best of hosts? Then he said in the second verse, but if you don't bring him to me, then there will be no rations for you with me, and don't come near me. So where we're at in the story of Surah Yusuf is this, that the brothers of Yusuf have come into his presence years later, maybe 20, 30 years later. And of course he recognizes them, but they don't know who they're talking to. He's probably speaking to them through an interpreter, an Egyptian official, and he's speaking to them through an interpreter. So they have no idea they're speaking to their own brother, but he knows exactly who they are. The brothers come in, and obviously he treats the brothers kindly, and what we learn from some of the tafasir, and it's logical from even from looking at this statement, is that there are some omissions in the verse. It wasn't that the first thing Yusuf said when his brothers came into his presence were these words. Rather, there's some omissions from the verse. Normally, some conversation should have taken place, right? He wouldn't immediately start giving out orders, if you don't give this, then no rations, and bring me another brother. Where would he know that? How would he know that? It's normal that as any prophet, he would be a wonderful host. And we have this in some of the tafasir. So he was a host. He served them, took care of them. Obviously, those who were working under him, they took care of him, salamatullah. And he gave them their rations. During that, either they came up and they mentioned who their brothers were and their family was, or he got this information out of them. Because Allah wanted that this would take place, that his brothers would come into Egypt, his family would relocate over there. So God wanted that to happen. So as some of the Mufassirin have said, they said, no, the brothers themselves, they started by telling that, yes, actually we are many brothers, and one of our brothers isn't here. Really? He does not hear? Yes, he stays with our father. Why doesn't he travel with you? Oh, this happened. Until finally Yusuf goes over. Now he's heard the information without revealing who he is. He goes over and says this. Maybe it's like they say in some of the tafasir from Ayatul Makarim Shirazi. So what happens is the brothers come over and they give out the information first. He finds out from them speaking who they are. And he gives them, for instance, an extra share, an extra camel load of food to take. Because they claim they have another brother. But he says, next time you come, bring that brother. That other brother who you have from your father, bring him. So maybe that's the case. So he tells them, and he gives them reason why. One of them is, I give full measure, and I'm the best of hosts. Inshallah, we'll talk about both of these things. The other one is, he says, what we do in America, we say in America, the carrot and the stick. Right? You want to get a donkey to do something, the carrot and the stick. So one side, I've given full measure, I've been the best of hosts, I've taken care of you, provided you what you need, the stick. If you don't bring me that brother, there is no share. Don't even come near me. Don't come to Egypt. Right? So the brothers, but why wouldn't they?
Right? When we've been treated that kindly, why wouldn't we come back to Egypt? Why wouldn't we bring that other brother? They are not suspecting anything wrong at all. So, because we're obviously looking for what this verse can do for us, or how we can somehow better ourselves and prepare the grounds for the Imam of the time, then let's look at how this verse can apply to us. Let's look at the words of the verse. فَلَمَّا وَلَمَّا جَهَّزَهُمْ بِجَهَازِهِمْ When Yusuf furnished them, when he furnished them with their provisions. We see that Yusuf alayhi salam is the one who, the verse is saying, he did tajheez. He provided them with their rations. Although, think about it, brothers and sisters, he's the number one under the king in Egypt. Do you really think he personally went and he took the wheat or whatever it was he was belonged to them and he personally put it on the camels? Huh? Probably not. The vice president of the whole country, right? He probably wouldn't do that. So what probably happened? He had others working under him. They provided them with the things, but still, their actions were like this. They did tajheez. They provided those camels with rations. So the Quran says, Jahazahum, Yusuf, alayhi salam, falamma jahazahum bijaz. So the point that we could get from this is that if there is an organization, a group of people, and they have a leadership, and the people who are working under that leadership, if they, how they behave reflects on the leadership. The leadership can even take credit for good actions that they've done, or God forbid, if they've done bad actions, the leadership might be blamed for that. Because Yusuf, the example that we see over here, is that Yusuf alayhi salam, or God is saying, not Yusuf, God is saying, that Yusuf did tajheez. Yusuf supplied these camels with their rations. As if he personally did it. Well, most likely those other people did it. So now, because we're talking about our own Imam, the Yusuf of our time, how can we use this to affect ourselves or to hasten his reappearance? What we learn from the Ahadith of the Ahlul Bayt is that there is special attention given by them to how we behave with others. Yusuf, in this example, he's a minister and there's people working under him and they, for instance, provide food for the camels. But we are working under an imam. We're part of a grand scheme. Our actions reflect back on that imam. If they're good, they reflect positively. If they're bad, so how do the Ahlul Bayt want us to act with those who are non-Shia? We're in a country where we're not, the majority are not Shias. What instructions do we have from Quran and Sunnah as to how to interact with our neighbors and our friends? What do they want to see? How could our actions reflect in such a way that they're reflecting positively on the Imam? We have some ahadith that I want to share with you, brothers and sisters, as reminders for all of us, first for myself and then for you. One set of these ahadith is talking about how to deal with our Sunni brothers and sisters. There's another verse of the Quran that talks specifically about kuffar and how to deal with them, non-Muslims. Right? So what we're going to do is we'll go over these ahadith and then see how can we serve the cause? How can we promote the cause of the Ahlul Bayt? So let's start with the first one, which is a hadith from the Imam advising us when it comes to non-Shias. But this one in particular is talking about our Sunni brothers and sisters. But we can get inspiration from this as to how we're supposed to interact with non-Muslims also. Usikum bitaqwallah, the Imam giving advice to the mu'mineen how to behave with others. He says, Usikum bitaqwallah, I advise you to have taqwa, to be God-fearing. The instructions, the primary instructions that we get from the Imams, from Ahlul Bayt, from God, from ulama, reminders to ourselves first, wajibat. Do those things which are wajib. And wajibat, there are many. It's not only acts of prayer. In my work, in my dealing with others, my family members, there's a lot of wajibat. Usikum bitaqwallah. Wal wara fi dinikum. Have this wara and taqwa in your. Wal ijtihad lillah. And that you really make extra effort, wa alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullah, for the sake of God. That the mu'min is someone who tries. Mu'min or mu'mina is someone who really makes effort for God. The next one gets a little tough now. وصدق الحديث. وصدق الحديث. صدق الحديث, obviously, as we know, brothers and sisters, is making sure that we're also always truthful. There are many times when it'd be a little easier, life will be a little easier if we told, what we say in America, a white lie. There's some lies that are very bad, right? But mu'min will never, sometimes maybe a white lie to just make things go a little easier. But the mu'min is supposed to be known for telling the truth. Sidq al-hadith. And we have in a hadith that when you want to test the followers of the Ahlul Bayt, you want to really see, and of course, for us, we're not going to just try and point fingers. I want to test everybody else, see if you're really a good mu'min or not, so I can give you an F. No. Alaykum as-salamu alaykum. Alaykum as-salamu alaykum. I'm trying to look inwards. Right? How can we test? How can I test myself to see if I'm that good follower of the Ahlul Bayt? They say two things to really concentrate on. And one of them is mentioned over here in the hadith. Well, actually, both of them are mentioned in the hadith. The first one is that sidqul hadith. They say, don't be impressed by the person making a lot of extra prayers, mustahab acts, hajj, giving in the way of God, these kind of things. Don't be fooled by them. What should you look for? Sidqul hadith. Does the person tell the truth? So obviously for ourselves, telling the truth. Wa ada'il amana. The other one is, if I'm entrusted with something, if I've been given a trust, to make sure that I return that trust. Those are the two things we find mentioned in the ahadith of the Ahlul Bayt, even when it comes to Salatul Layl. But he's such a good brother, or such a good sister. Salatul Layl, that's a great thing. Great, but Sidqul Hadith, Adalama. Both of those. The other thing that says is, Watul Sujood. Long sajda after prayer. After prayer, the mu'min. After prayer. The ulama tell us, they say that if we want to act on this hadith, because obviously as brothers and sisters here, soldiers of Imam Mahdi, want to act on these hadith, how can we act on this hadith? What can we do that makes us have tulis sujood? They say even if we have in this sujood, and we say, and I'll make sure I'm reciting the correct dhikr for you, but I think it's this one that the alim said. He said, we say shukr to God three times, that's tulis sujood. There's different hadith for different people. All of us, we might not have the same strength, Imam Al-Kadhim alayhi salam, those kind of long, but we can do it, even if we have this one after the prayers. He says, wa husnul jawar, and also to be an excellent neighbor. Also be an excellent neighbor. And hadith says, fa bihadha ja'a Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So we see that the focus in the religion wasn't only those wajibat, which are definitely necessary, right? But even being a good neighbor, telling the truth, taking care of amana, these things. The hadith continues. He says, "Addul al-amana ila man tamanakum alayha." He says that make sure you give this amana to whoever trusts you. He says, "Barran aw fajira." Whether the person be righteous or whether the person be fasiq and fajr. So it's not just the case that I only, yeah, if I'm dealing with a good mu'min, then I give the trust back. But if it's, you know, they're not really alayhi salam, that mu'min, not really, then, no. Actually, to everyone. The hadith continues. It says, فَإِنَّ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ, that the Prophet was like this. كَانَ يَعْمُرُ بِأَدَاءِ الْخَيْتِ وَالْمِخْيَةِ. The Prophet was so precise when it came to this giving back of the trust. Even the thread and the needle, the thing that you use to sew with, even to that extent, the Prophet used to want to see that trust were returned. And you may have heard that story of the Holy Prophet. But it's good for us to be reminded about these points. They said that once the Holy Prophet, he had gone and he marched outside of Khaybar. So the army of the Mu'mineen outside of Khaybar. And they're away, as you know, that Khaybar is away from Medina. They had to march. So you're not in your own territory. The Mu'mineen, and we would have been there. If we had been at that time, we would have been with Rasulullah. They say they got so hungry after a while, they were eating maybe horses. Right? You run out of regular food, now even the horses you're eating. They said, at this time, when things had gotten this tough, then somebody came out of the fortress of the Yahud, a shepherd. And he wanted to know a little bit about Islam. And he started speaking to the Prophet. The Prophet explained what the religion was. And he was like, what a wonderful religion. I accept this Islam. Then he offered something. Now this is a test. He said that, now that I'm one of you guys, now that I'm one of the mu'mineen, he said that I have these sheep at my disposal. These sheep at my disposal. I'm not one of the Yahud anymore. I'm not with them. People are hungry, eating horses maybe. Sheep. And they say in that hadith of the Prophet, said, no, we don't betray the trust. No, go back, send those sheep. You want to join us? Bismillah. But betraying the trust? No. So, that's one of the hadith that talk about how we should be. We're Shias living in a non-Shia environment. Let me mention a verse also about the non-Muslims. This one is in Surah Mumtahina. Surah Mumtahina. So it's Surah number 60 and verse number 8. Allah says this, Subhanahu wa Ta'ala, لا ينهاكم الله عن الذين, that God does not forbid you from those, عن الذين لم يقاتلوكم في الدين. It's true that as Muslims, we do have enemies of the religion. People who fight the Muslims, fight Islam. We're not talking about those guys. Here in this verse, it says, God does not forbid you from those who did not fight you for the religion. وَلَمْ يُخْرِجُوكُمْ مِنْ دِيَارِكُمْ, and did not force you out of your homes. Regular people, people we see every day, our neighbors, those people around us, they're not fighting us over the religion, these individuals. أَنْتَبَرُّوهُمْ وَتُقْسِتُوا إِلَيْهِمْ, that you be kind to these people, birr, and also just. So God wants to see these kind of behaviors from us. This is the way that we're going to call other people towards the path. Now what happens is the imams also explain for us, what happens if you're like this? Question, if I'm like this, if I obey your instructions, if I'm like this, what happens? The hadith says, فَإِنَّ الرَّجُلْ مِنْكُمْ, if one of you is like this. Now the hadith says rajul, but mu'min, mu'mina, whoever is like this, إِذَا وَرَعَ فِي دِينِهِ, when he has that taqwa. وَصَدَقَ الْحَدِيثِ, he tells the truth. وَأَدَاءَ الْأَمَانَةِ, returns trust. وَحَسُنَ خُلْقُهُ مَعَ النَّاسِ, and he has excellent akhlaq with the people. If there's a brother or a sister who's like this, what happens? The imam says, قِيلَ هَذَا جَعْفَرِيٌ, it's said that such an individual is Ja'fari. This is a Shia of the imam. The same way in the story of Yusuf, that Yusuf took credit for the work of his soldiers or those people who were working under him, the imam takes credit for you and I, for our actions. He says, so if the akhlaq is like that, if we're like that, he says, قِيلَ هَذَا جَعْفَرِيٌ وَيَسُرُّنِي ذَلِكَ. The imam says, this makes me happy. I'm pleased to hear that, to see that one of my Shia are following the instructions, doing what they're supposed to do. This pleases me. وَيَدْخُلُ عَلَيَّ مِنْهُ السُّرُورِ, he says, I become very happy because of this. وَقِيلَ هَذَا أَدَبُ جَعْفَرِ, and it said that this is the akhlaq, the etiquette of Ja'far. So the imam, the same way that Yusuf took credit for his people in this situation, in the verse of the Holy Quran, our imam, the living imam, Imam al-Mahdi, is taking credit for our good actions. If we want to bring others to the path of the Ahlul Bayt, we have to obviously be like that. Now there's something that comes up here, a little test that comes up. Because we've heard a hadith like this. Okay? But let me tell you something that comes into my mind. A test that I've come across, and maybe some of you have also come across. Sometimes, when we're trying to be good Muslims, and trying to invite others to the path of the Ahlul Bayt through our actions, instead of being, you know, trying to steal from others, rob others, no, I'm trying to do all of those good things. I feel even a sense of responsibility when I enter, let's say, into work or school. I really, literally feel a sense of responsibility. I'm a Muslim. I'm here representing Islam. I'm very much conscious of my actions. What's the test that happens? I've also heard a hadith about this that tells me, for instance, to have good akhlaq, to be kind to my neighbors, to be good to people, to tell the truth. The test, what happens? Remember, brothers and sisters, shaitan sees everything that we're doing, and he tries to look for our Achilles heel. How can I get this mu'min or mu'mina off the path? What can I do? Think about it from shaitan's point of view. I have this mu'min or mu'mina who feels very much serious about representing Islam properly. Good akhlaq, working hard. How can I get this person off the path? Now, let me let you in on one of shaitan's secrets. What shaitan does, I'm just telling you because he does this to me. I'm not a friend of his. Okay, so what shaitan does is, he sees the mu'min is trying so hard to be careful, sometimes the temptation comes to break God's rule in order to fit in. What? Yeah, sometimes you have a mu'min who wants to do all the right things, wants to have good akhlaq, feels very conscious. For instance, this is a minor example. For instance, let's say I'm fully representing Islam and then I go into an area and then somebody from the opposite gender sticks out their hand. Huh? And they say you never get a second chance to make a first impression. So the tiny example, there's other examples of this. The temptation will be Muslim, good akhlaq, supposed to be nice. Astaghfirullah. Huh? Whereas actually, no. God doesn't want that. That good akhlaq that we're talking, it's not by breaking the rules that I'll get anybody to enter. By slipping, by sliding, by... No, that hurts the cause. It's painful for the imam. We'll hear the hadith from the imam. What happens if we don't obey the rules? How painful that is for the imam. But also, even for others in the for others who are looking out. I mentioned this, I don't know if I mentioned this to you guys once. There's a reporter. The reporter is writing an article about Muslims. And he says that I'm not going to mention the name of the country. I went to a place. There were these Muslims over there. And he says the Muslims start talking about, you know, Islam and stuff like that. He says, what the Muslims start doing? He said they start doing their normal routine of saying Islam means peace. Islam, peace. That reporter said, he said, I could smell the horse manure from so far away. Okay? Islam means submission. Islam has rules. The Muslims aren't fooling me when they try and pretend that these rules don't exist for my sake. I know the rules already. But you know what you are telling me? As a non-Muslim, you don't believe it yourself. You don't believe it. I know those of you. Whenever I see a sister who's muhajjaba come in, I know there's certain things she doesn't do. God forbid, if there is a mu'min or a mu'mina who breaks the rules, then it gives them more ammo for the other mu'minin who are still trying. But your friend came here and they shook hands. There was alcohol being served. They didn't get upset. For instance, I'm just giving some small examples. So the whole point, let's go back to the point. The idea is that just because we are aware that as mu'mineen, mu'minat, we are supposed to serve by having this good akhlaq, telling the truth, it doesn't mean we don't stand for our principles or think the rule applies here. Let me break God's rules in order to get them to come into Islam. There have been brothers, and I'm sure there were sisters too. What I'm giving is a true example, where you have two sets of brothers, you'll say, who will go into a university. Both of them, this is a Muslim country I'm talking about, both of them are working hard as the practicing, active brothers and sisters, let's say, in that community, to bring other non-practicing individuals into Islam. Okay? Two sets. One set compromised on these principles. In the beginning, we'll shake hands. In the beginning, we'll do all of that. Slowly, we'll get them in, and then we'll present what Islam is. The other brothers were hardcore brothers. God's rules, don't you know the brothers who stood by their principles? They were more successful. We're not gaining any ground by breaking God's rules. People will think it's bad akhlaq. Let them. I'll be charming. I'll explain. But I'm not going to break God's rules. So, if the opposite is true, though, it also reflects badly on that leadership and on the imam of the time. The words of the imam, continuation of the hadith. وَإِذَا كَانَ عَلَى غَيْرِ ذَلِكَ. If that's not the case, that the mu'min has that wonderful akhlaq and these things, he says that دَخَلَ عَلَيَّ بَلَاؤُهُ وَآرُهُ. That the bala of that mu'min, the shame of that mu'min, is on me. They say once that there was this one very revolutionary brother. Very revolutionary. So this revolutionary brother was there and he was making salat. So when he was making salat, then he would say, Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahba, and then he would start, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So one of the brothers is beside him, he says, brother, you can't do this. Batil, you can't add Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahba to. So the brother looked at him. I'm going to make asr. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahba, Marba Zidde Vilayat Faqih. So, in that way, that doesn't help the cause. It doesn't, people now, they'll think good of them. So, for us, as followers of the Ahlul Bayt, we have to make sure that we're doing the right thing, obeying God, doing His thing. And in this way, inshallah, we'll be able to help the cause. Now, there are some other verses, though, that talk about, and the reason I want to mention this is, well, actually, it's two points that I want to mention. One of them is, that we talked about a hadith specifically about the brothers and sisters of Ahlul Sunnah. Alhamdulillah. We also talked about a verse of the Quran talking about the kuffar. Something else that I want to mention as a challenge for us here, brothers and sisters who are living over here in Sweden. Now, for brothers and sisters who are living over here in Sweden, as you know, we have a large community of people who are followers of Ahlul Bayt in this community. Before we even want to start putting a whole lot of focus on trying to bring new people to the path of Ahlul Bayt, which is also something which is good, which is also something which is wonderful, one maybe a more important thing for us to do would be to all of those people who are already Mu'min, already Shia, what kind of numbers do we have of people here? I remember hearing once, you guys can correct me, they said around 50,000 just from Iraq. Let alone how many other people. How many people attend our majalis and are in our centers? Doesn't look like 50,000, not here. Not yet. So, in addition to, we want to make sure that we try and help to bring some of those brothers and sisters in to the centers. Let me explain a principle that applies for all of us. A principle. We have hadith from the Ahlul Bayt that encourages, one that I want to mention, inshallah, is from Amir al-Mu'mineen, that remind us of the importance of being with other mu'mineen. Being with other mu'mineen. The hadith is in Nahj al-Balagha. After the imam makes that emphasis and that khutbah, he says, فَإِنَّ يَدَ اللَّهِ مَعَ الْجَمَاعَةِ. يَدَ اللَّهِ, the hand of God, he says, is with jama'ah. Don't separate from the people. I don't have anything to do. And I'm going to mention how this really affects us. Okay? Then he says, why? Well, why not? If I'm a mu'min, I'm praying, I'm fasting, I do my own thing, then what happens if I don't? فَإِنَّ الشَّاذ مِنَ النَّاسِ لِلشَّيْطَانِ. The person who doesn't come around others, doesn't hang out with other mu'mineen, doesn't visit them, that's not part of my routine. The person who is away from the people, أَشَّاذْ مِنَ النَّاسِ لِلشَّيْطَانِ. He says, كَمَا أَنَّشَّاذْ مِنَ الْغَنَمْ لِلذِّئْبِ. He says the same way that the wolf, the flock of sheep are moving along. There's a flock of them, they can protect themselves. But the wolf is waiting, he sees one straggling, then he goes and he gets that person. If there is someone who is not part of the masjid, not coming around, not being regularly, and we have to remember we're not a Muslim country. We need to be regularly be fed these teachings of Ahlul Bayt, reminded of what our responsibility is. We need to see other people praying and fasting, right, to encourage us to be strong. If we don't have that happens, it's easy to slip. Easier than one might think. Alhamdulillah, we are here, we're participating. But for those who are away, you'd be surprised. Sometimes good people, they'll go to the university, you talk to them after a little while long, been away from the other mu'mineen. Yeah, I haven't prayed in a long time. But like, brother, you were a mountain. You were, I mean, I didn't say this to the brother, but I was quite surprised. But it happens. So why am I mentioning this to you? Just as part of our responsibility here. If we can, brothers and sisters, there are other mu'mineen who are here. We have programs on occasion. You brothers and sisters have been trying to have programs on occasion. But what we can do is, each one of us has a circle of friends. Other people who are good people, lovers of Ahlul Bayt, want to know the truth. We can bring our friends, remind them. God knows, maybe God through this will guide us, guide these individuals. Maybe God will have mercy on us because I reached out and I cared. Instead of me only coming to the majlis myself, I encourage others. In some of the other communities, when they've been able to really get their youth on track, because remember, this problem is not only here in Sweden that other communities don't have this problem. No, the exact same problem, but brothers and sisters will tell you in other communities, they say we have lost generations of Muslims. Generations. That you have people here, and now these youth, for instance, they'll say, these youth that you're seeing here, there were others before them, they're gone. Islam, out of their lives. Out of their lives. So they said, how, but then I asked these youth, well, how is it that you guys are so successful? What is it? They say that what we've done is, our masjid is a place where we go to see our friends. When I'm going to Dua Kumail, I'll text my buddy, you'll be there too? Okay, great. So what happens is that the mu'mineen are saying that I realize that it's my responsibility not only to protect myself, but if I can reach out and I can help some other mu'mineen and bring them in also, then that's also my duty. I also want to make sure that of course, Islam says work on the self, right? And my first priority is taking care of my own self and purifying myself, but that's not all I have to do. Also, I want to be bringing others in. So that same good akhlaq and these things that I want to be having, I want to make sure that obviously I have that for my family, for my friends and people that I know. Okay. Brothers and sisters, inshallah, we won't keep you here too long tonight. These are the days of Arba'een. So inshallah, with your permission, we'd like to go to revisit these events. Brothers and sisters, inshallah, once they turn off the lights, then we'll try and bring our hearts and our minds to those sandy plains, the plains of Karbala. Now, when others are going to visit the Imam, going to walk on that way that they have to go and visit the Imam, we hope that the Imam accepts this small effort from us. Let's say this is the time around when Zainab and the women are coming back to Karbala. Inshallah, we'll get to the day of Arba'een. We'll talk about the specific masaib that they have. But they say that when the women came, they threw themselves off the camels. They're going over, and obviously for all of them, remembering what happened on those days. As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah wa ala al-arwah allati hallat bifinaik. عليك مني سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار ولا جعله الله آخر الأهد مني لزيارتكم السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وَعَلَىٰ أَصْحَابِ الْحُسَيْنِ. One of those events that they must have definitely remembered is the martyrdom of Hazrat Abbas. They say that when Hazrat Abbas came to his brother after all of the other members of the family had been killed, after he sent his own three brothers, then he came to his brother asking him for permission. The hadith says, فَبَكَى الْحُسَيْنُ بُكَاءً شَدِيدًا. Hussein started to cry when his last soldier comes to him. He said, يَا أَخِي أَنْتَ صَاحِبُ اللِّوَائِ. He said, brother, you're my standard bearer. If you go, I don't have any army left. He refused to give permission to his brother. Abbas came back, asking him for permission again. He said, I want to get revenge on those munafiqeen. Then the imam gave him the order. He said, go and get some water for those children. First, Abbas went and he admonished the enemy. The enemy told him, they said, if the whole world was water and it was under our control, we wouldn't give you a drop of it unless you come into the bay'at of Yazid. Abbas came back. He tells the imam of his time, this is the situation. And he hears, they say, the calls of the children, Al-Atash, Al-Atash, the children begging for water. They said that Abbas raised his head towards heaven and he made this dua, Ilahi wa Sayyidi, Abbas begging his Lord for opportunity, Uridu an a'tadda bi'uddati wa amla liha'ila al-atfal qirbatan min al-ma. I want to fill this water skin with water. They said, Abbas, set off with the Euphrates. And there were 4,000 men guarding that. Abbas came over and he rode in, fighting his way, killing those enemies, fighting until he got into the water itself. They said when he got into the water itself, Abbas put his hand into the water. And he was about to drink. فَتَذَكَّرَ عَتَشَ أَخِي. He remembered the thirst of his brother. Abbas cast the water down. He went and he filled the water skin with water, remounted the horse. And now he comes back and he starts riding toward his brother. He wants to do that mission that his imam set him out on, to bring that water back to those children. He's bringing the water back and the enemy begin to attack him. They surround him. They begin to fight him. They're attacking, cutting, attacking. Abbas is fighting till finally they go and they cut off Abbas's right arm. Abbas said these words, Wallah in qata'tum yamini inni uhami abadan andini. By God, if you cut off my right hand, I will continue to protect my religion for forever. Abbas comes forward, still fighting, still pushing, but too many of the enemy, they step from behind a tree. One of them cuts off his left hand. Abbas now doesn't have hands. They say Abbas takes the water skin into his teeth. And now Abbas continues moving forward, trying to go until finally they say there were so many arrows. The arrows come raining down on Abbas. An arrow hits him in the eye. An arrow hits the water skin. They say, Abbas, stop. فوقف الأباس. The enemy began now to attack Abbas. And Abbas doesn't have arms to defend himself. Abbas topples from the horse. They say at this stage, there's two ways that we relate what Abbas said. Some say at this stage he called out to his brother and say, oh brother, come and save me. Some say even at this stage, Abbas couldn't bring himself to ask for his brother to help him. He simply said, Alayka minni as-salam ya Aba Abdullah. The imam came rushing towards his brother. He attacked the enemy. And he came back to his fallen, broken body of his brother. And he said, Al-an in kasara dhahni, that now my back has become broken. Allah la'natullah ala al-qawm al-thalimeen. Wa sayya'lamu al-lazina dhalamu ayyamun qalabin yanqalimun. Waqsalatu. Accept this from us. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.